Well, we're just gonna have to work it out as we go along.
Their point of entry to the building was a service stairwell for the entire block. On each level, there were glass-inset doors on the mezzanine, with corridors leading off that were occupied by locals. It didn't take long for them to realize that not only was this where Dr. Jean lived and kept his prisoners, it was the nerve center of his empire. The source of the broadcasts, one floor in particular, seemed to lead straight onto a studio floor from one set of doors, and as they climbed higher, they were aware that they were entering the more private areas of the Baron's domain. Here there was less activity, but there was also a higher quotient of guards. But the companions walked freely along the corridors and moved from room to room. By the time they had reached the eighth floor, it was starting to look as though they would need a miracle to locate Jack and Marissa. As they passed through the glass insets on the eighth floor, Ryan and JB taking one side, Doc and Mildred taking the other, Christy peered over Ryan's shoulder.
What?
Ryan turned to Christy, puzzled. He had seen what she had, but failed to grasp the significance. Two guards wheeled a clothes rack on which hung a half dozen costumes of colorful design, complete with headdresses. They turned left into a room, then came out minus the pole, and headed on down the corridor.
Jack and Marissa are to be a sacrifice, right? That implies ritual. People will be needed to assist Dr. Jean, and they'll wear those costumes.
And those masks. Yeah, this could work.
You mean you want us to take Jack and Marissa in front of the whole Ville, and that's not causing ripples?
They moved through the glass doors toward the room holding the costumes, checking each room as they passed. They weren't the only ones on this floor, but those working in the other rooms were too engrossed in their tasks to notice them. The travelers made it with ease to the room where the costumes were housed, and found it unoccupied. GB kept watch while Ryan inspected the costumes. They might be a tight fit for himself and Doc. They were considerably taller than the average local, but the others would be able to manage easily.
Hey, there are six of these and only five of us. We can take one of the locals with us.
Could be a good thing. We won't know how this ceremony of theirs works, so one of them could be a useful guide, especially if they know they're chilled meat for one wrong move.
They settled back to wait for the rightful owners of the costumes to enter. As they waited, they could feel the pitch and hum of activity, the tension building outside in the square. Somewhere in this building, they knew that Jack and Marissa could hear it too. JB kept watch on the corridor, making sure that he could note all the comings and goings without being noticed. It seemed as though the ritual members were waiting till the last minute to dress for the ritual, and JB was starting to get edgy. It was with a palpable sense of relief that he saw six people enter the corridor through a set of double doors at the far end. They talked among themselves, and an armed sec man trailed behind them. They too were armed, but their guns were holstered, which meant they could more easily be taken by surprise. JB readied his teammates. Ryan nodded, and quickly climbed onto a table to take out one of the two bulbs lighting the room. Christy followed his lead, rapidly unscrewing the other and blowing on her burning fingers. To knock the bulbs out would cause too much noise, and stealth was their greatest ally.
Frank, the lights are out again. Pass on, though. Don't maintenance do anything around here?
All right, I'll see to it.
Anyone looking would have seen Ryan's scarf snake out around the man's neck and pull him back. Ryan kicked the door closed as the sec man fell back into the room and was plunged into darkness. Ryan drew the panga from his thigh and wasted no time in killing the sentry.
Christy, how about a light?
Christy screwed back the bulb in its socket, and the room was illuminated. The stunned Ville dwellers took in the four companions with blaster strained on them, and the fifth, who was standing over the dead guard. They knew they had no chance of reaching their own weapons.
Okay, we can do this the easy way or the hard way. The easy way is, you let us knock you out and leave you for later while we take your place. The hard way is we chill you all like your man here.
Dr. Jean would chill us all anyway.
JB's techno streaked through the air and took the woman in the side of the neck. She was dead before she hit the floor.
So who wants to be next? No takers? All right, you. You're gonna help us. The rest of you, pleasant dreams. What's your name?
Rosalyn.
Okay. You do this right, and you'll be okay. You fuck with us, and you'll be joining them. Is that clear?
Mm-hmm.
Good. Now let's get started.
Oh, dear. I do hope you haven't gone and perished before I've had a chance to give you my message to the gods. That would be very inconvenient, to say the least. Wake up, you filth!
Jack opened his eyes and spoke through a mouth filled with blood.
I'm awake.
Both Jack and Marissa were in a state where nothing much registered. No pain, no sound, no sense of danger. Silently, deep within, Jack was screaming that this was wrong, but there was nothing he could do to snap out of his torpor. Shortly after Dr. Jean had first spoken to them, the scar-faced sentry had come back and injected Jack and Marissa with something that had given an immediate rush. Maybe it was because it was straight into the bloodstream, or it was because Dr. Jean's old tech labs had developed a more pure strain than had been known before. But this jolt, it hit them both straight between the eyes. Jack knew that the point of the drugging was to make Marissa and himself completely subservient, to make them pliable and easy meat for Dr. Jean to sacrifice. And it was working. He felt as though he hadn't a care in the world, and that he could just stand there forever. He had meant to look over at Marissa to see how she was doing, but somehow, he hadn't been able to motivate himself into doing this. But now he could see Marissa off to the side. Her head was lolling uselessly, shaking slightly as she tried to clear it. Her head turned, and her eyes met his. He hoped that his own eyes didn't look as wide and clouded as hers.
Oh, welcome back. I must admit, that was quite a powerful jolt. If you'll pardon my little joke, that I had Diamond administer to you. A necessary measure, I'm sure you'll understand. Oh, you think I don't remember you, Jack Lorne? Shoot, I was with Tormon when it all went belly up. I saw what you did to him with the help of those other insurgents. Fortunately, they seem to have deserted you, or perhaps you parted company with them some time back. Who knows? And frankly, who cares?
The Baron was dressed in a costume covered with rags and feathers that had been dyed a variety of bright colors. Bones, some from poultry, with others that had been human, hung from the costume. He had a top hat perched on his head with a feather plume at the crown and ribbons tied around. His face was painted a ghostly white, his cheekbones etched out in charcoal. It made his eyes seem larger than normal, the whites of them yellowed and shot with red veins. He loomed up in front of Jack, and he could smell the crude spirit on the doctor's breath.
You've done me a favor, really. You've offered yourself up to me and taken away the threat of the swamp scum, played right into my hands, and saved me the effort of clearing out the swamp for myself. And now you've come to me to be my messengers to the gods.
You really believe that?
Honestly, at first I thought it was just utter nonsense myself, something I could use to control the masses, mold them to what I wanted. But the strange thing is that after a while I began to see that there were gods out there, and that somehow they were actually shaping my destiny, driving me on so that I can move beyond the pest-ridden swamp and to the lands beyond, where I can accrue greater riches, greater power, where I can fulfill my destiny.
Bullshit. That's just joke talking.
Now perhaps you're right. But does it matter, really? If you want something to be bad enough, then you make it so. Setu, time to get on with the show.
Dr. Jean strode away from his captives to call in guards waiting outside and order them to take Jack and Marissa down from the racks and carry them out to the shrine in front of the building. As his bonds were released and he flopped off the frame of the rack, Jack tried to move. He knew he couldn't fight back here and now, but he wanted to try to flex his muscles, see what kind of response he got. There was no response. No matter how much he tried to use his muscles, they felt like jelly. Marissa fared no better. As he let himself be carried through the building, Jack got little more than a series of impressions. The corridors were lit like the redoubts, and the air hummed with the same kind of pre-dark tech that he had witnessed before. There were people moving through the corridors who paid no attention to himself or Marissa, as though this was always happening. He did notice, however, that they were deferential to the Baron, who followed a few steps behind. They left the corridors and started down a staircase, turning right to come out into a lobby with a high ceiling. This had to be the front of the old building, before the steps that had been turned into the shrine facing the square. Jack had seen old buildings in this style before, and knew they would soon emerge into the night air. As they left the lobby, he noticed Dr. Jean waiting back, turning and muttering something to one of his men. Jack tried to catch it, but it was lost in the exultant roar that broke from the crowd as the guard carried Marissa and himself out onto the platform of the shrine. All else was lost in this atmosphere of lust and hate. Jack felt himself lifted onto a stone slab that was decorated with feathers and stones. He could feel the stones press into his back, causing him discomfort, but couldn't control his own body well enough to move against them. He looked up at the night sky beyond the electric lighting, augmented by blazing torches. The naked flames cast warmth into the cold air, streams of which flowed around the slab, and contrasted with the occasional bursts of heat from the torches and from the massed ranks of humanity that stood in front of him. Jack tried to look across at Marissa. Her slab was to his right, some 2 yards away, and from the corner of his eye, he could just about see her lying there inert. The Baron stepped out into the shrine, his arms held aloft in recognition of his people.
Diamond, where are my assistants? I can't perform the ceremony by myself.
Should be down by now, sir. I'll check them out. It's not like them to keep you waiting.
I should hope not. They know what the consequences are. Ah, here they are.
The old lobby opened, and 6 people in costumes strode out. 5 of them were masked, but the woman in the lead had her mask under her arm.
Forgive us. The costume's late in arriving.
The doctor was completely oblivious to the fact that the barrel of Ryan's Sig Sauer was pressed neatly into Rosalind's back.
What these things happen? I will look into it later. Now get ready with the others. We have a ceremony to conduct.
Dr. Jean turned and strode out onto the platform, where the guards were tying down Jack and Marissa. Watching the crowd, Ryan and his people found their skin began to crawl and prickle with sweat. There was a sense of power and menace in the air, almost like another presence up there on the platform had joined them. Dr. Jean held his arms aloft, and then gestured at the 2 prone sacrificial victims with a sweep of his arms.
Almighty gods! Accept these messengers and the hopes of our people! Help our people search for a better land and a greater life!
Que le bon Dieu vous bénisse!
Up on the shrine platform, and beyond the conditioning that Dr. Jean had placed on his people, it was obvious to see how his effects were achieved. Under the chanting of the crowd, a low humming sound was barely audible. It was unsettling and disturbing to the companions. But more than that, because they were free of years of hypnosis and drugs, and had experienced similar phenomena before, they were able to identify the sound as something emanating from the vid screens around the square. Ryan, Christy, and JB didn't know quite how it worked, only that it did. But Mildred and Doc, for differing reasons, knew exactly what was going on. The sound was a trigger to impulses that the old tech had planted in the people of the Ville over a period of years, augmented by the jolt they were regularly fed. Even now, they could see people across the crowd snorting powder. Those who didn't have their own were helping themselves from bowls of the drug the Sekhmen were carrying. All of this was designed to whip the crowd into a frenzy for the ceremony. So now they were 5, standing on the platform in disguise, with an armed and frenzied crowd before them and an armed force behind them, hoping to save Jack and Marissa and somehow spirit them out of the square. The only member of the Ville who didn't seem to be affected in any way by the events taking place was the woman who had led them onto the platform. She had gestured to them to take their places, 3 by each slab. Any influence the hypnosis or drugs of the past may have had on her had been temporarily wiped clean by the rush of her own fear. She looked out at the crowd as if seeing it for the first time. Now she stood apart, and it seemed an alien and frightening presence to her. She looked around, her eyes wide behind her mask, no longer knowing quite what was expected of her.
Brothers and sisters of the Swamplands, a bonne nouvelle. This very night, the gods have delivered us certain victory over the last dredges of filth the swampland had to offer. The only spot for renegades that threatened our way of life. And we shall balance the scales. Tonight, we shall deliver unto them in kind a message of gratitude. A message of hope for their future. A message written in blood!
Dr. Jean turned to the nearest slab, which was Marissa's, and held out his hands. JB was nearest to the Baron, with Mildred and Christy around the slab. He cast a glance toward their captive, hoping that she would guide him. It was a vain hope, as Rosalind was completely petrified. JB decided that now was the time to take matters into his own hands. As the Baron drew near, JB pulled out his Tecna and stepped in toward Dr. Jean, using the folds of his costume to mask the thrust he made. The Baron's eyes, already exaggerated by his makeup, became absurdly wide as JB's thrust took the knife up and into his stomach. Dr. Jean was a big man, sturdily built, with layers of fat and muscle. Dr. Jean staggered backward as JB went sprawling, the bloodied knife still in his fist. The crowd froze with confusion, the people in their trance-like state, unsure of exactly what was going on. Mildred and Christy knew. As quickly as they could, they untied the bonds that kept Marissa on the slab. Because of her jolt-addled state, the guards hadn't bothered to tighten the knots. Mildred and Christy pulled the woman off the slab. She stumbled and tried to keep her feet, but they couldn't assist her. They had to prepare themselves for the firefight that they knew would come. JB was already on his feet, his Tecna sheathed and the mini Uzi in his hands. He threw off his costume so that he would no longer be encumbered by it. The people could see Dr. Jean staggering across the platform, bent over and clutching at his stomach, blood running down the rags and feathers around his middle.